Hannah Victoria, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me where it began for you. Had you always wanted to work in fashion?
It wasn't something where I was like, oh yeah, I want to do that. I was always the arty one. I didn't want to be the arty one, actually. I wanted to be quite academic, but I struggled.
When you were doing the fashion degree, you were kind of sure at that point you'd probably work in fashion?
So I've always had a thing for clothes. I kind of just mixed the two.
What looks like the coolest, most glamorous industry, it's fucking horrendous. Every one of those brands is the biggest set of CUNTs who just want to abuse the life out of everybody in the food chain below them.
I walked out at one point because they were having people sleep there and eat there and work all through the night, and it was all for free because you're an intern. When you're in the fashion world, it's very focused on building your CV, and it's the names that are on your CV. If you've got certain names, you're going to do well.
Guys, Matt Haycox here, and welcome to another episode of The Matt Haycox Show, where today I have got a true visionary in children's fashion. She's the founder and the creative force behind Kid, which is a mindful brand for kids aged from 3 to 12.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to little Nelly being able to wear it in two years' Yay. Time. She can be a little baby model for you. She's got an honours degree in fashion design. Mm. She's earned a recognition at the London Graduate Fashion Week, and she went on to shine at H&M in Sweden before landing here in Dubai, like where all good people come. Driven by a belief in mindful children's fashion, she founded Kid in 2022, transforming design sketches into mindful and expressive clothing. Hannah Victoria, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
There we go. Take two was much better than take one, wasn't it? How are you liking Dubai?
Oh, it's lovely. I didn't like it at first.
Oh, really?
No. I was Why? Like, oof. Do you know, because I'm a nature girl. I struggled massively.
But, you know, so we were talking a bit before we recorded, and I was saying that, you know, I came here for an 8-day holiday and never went back. And, you know, most of the people I knew back in England, I think whether they were hating on Dubai or whether they were hating on just a concept of, you know, leaving England.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're not going to like it. You're going to come back soon. I'm like, well, if I don't like it, then I will come back soon. No biggie. But one of the biggest criticisms that everybody had was there's no nature. Or it's like, well, there's no Yorkshire countryside. I mean, of course, there's no fucking Yorkshire countryside. But as far as the nature's concerned, I mean, you don't see it initially, because I guess if you're stuck in the marina all the time, if you're stuck in the DRC, you don't get to see it. Mm-hmm. But once you get, whatever, half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour outside, I think there is beautiful nature.
There is.
It's just very different to what we're used to back in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think people have a strong opinion on Dubai before you even get there. Mm. So it's like people don't know that there is different sides to Dubai, you know, unless you live here and you see it and you know, people think it's just a holiday destination, and it is, but like you say, there's nature if you go a bit further out and stuff like that.
I mean, so I really do think it's got the best of everything here. Oh, I would say, look, it's business, if it's shopping, if it's partying, if it's, you know, I mean, whatever it is you want to do, they've got it, and they've got it on steroids. Mm-hmm.
And people say it from home, I don't know if they say it to you, oh, you live in such a bubble. Hear that so much. I'm like, great, I'm just going to stay in this bubble. I'm never coming back.
But I think it's just a comment, and I hear it all the time as well, but it's just a comment that's said by people, I guess, maybe they don't have the knowledge to know what's going on, or they're jealous or grumpy about it, whatever.
Maybe.
Because, I mean, ultimately, when you think about what constitutes that bubble they think of, I mean, why is that different to being in London or being in Miami?
Well, exactly.
I mean exactly. everything's kind of like a bubble.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it is a bubble I would happily stay in if it was for the summer. The summer's just too hot.
Me too. Yeah. It's only this year, not this year, we're in January, but last year where I thought I could stay here a long time now. Whereas before I was like, maybe not. But then I was like, there's just so much opportunity. Everything's easy as well. You know, obviously you've got to work hard for it. But I mean, easy is in the sense of it's anything's possible. You know, you don't feel like, oh, I can't do that or I can't do that. Like,
well, I think it's because as well, everybody here has such a positive mindset, such a can-do, friendly, you know, helpful type setup. You know, whether it's wanting to meet someone, whether it's wanting to do something, everybody's there to try and help you move forward.
Yeah.
Whereas in England, you know, I always kind of hate these conversations because I hate to be an England basher, but it just gets easier and easier. But you know, if you want to do something in England, mm-hmm. it's always very much, well, you can't do it because of this, or you can't do it because of that.
Restrictions.
If you want to meet someone in England, well, why? What's in it for me?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what's in it for you yet because I've not met them. Whereas, you know, everybody's very, very friendly.
And helpful.
Yes.
Everyone wants to help each other. For me so far, I've never felt like someone's trying to stop me from doing something or stop an opportunity. I feel like everyone's very helpful, especially in the business world, you know. And I think that you just don't get that there.
Well, look, we're not here to do the PR for Dubai. We're here to talk all about you and Kid and your journey. But I guess pre-Dubai, tell me where it began for you. I mean, you went to study fashion at London
College? Birmingham City. Yeah.
And had you always wanted to work in fashion?
No. Fashion, it wasn't something where I was like, oh yeah, I want to do that. I'm quite an indecisive person. So to choose a degree for me was quite hard because there's so many.
What had you done prior? I mean, I presume you must have been quite arty or something.
Yeah, so during my whole education, I was always the arty one. But you know what was weird? I didn't want to be the arty one, actually. I wanted to be quite academic and smart. But I struggled. I struggled with that. Like, I worked really hard in school because I wanted to be good at stuff. But I just ended up being really good at art. And obviously, the art world isn't seen as like, you know, a real job or like a high paid job. So anyway, I fell into it because I was just good at it. And then I ended up doing a course after I left school. So I did all the qualifications you could possibly do because I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I did high school and then I did sixth form and then I did college and then I did uni. So I did it all. But it wasn't till I was finishing college that I decided to go to uni.
What were you doing at college?
Art. Yeah. And I wanted to do loads of different things. I wanted to be in animation. I wanted to be in painting. I was a bit all over the place. And I didn't actually want to go to uni. And then when I finished college, I was like, I don't know what I want to do. And I think uni's such a good place to figure that out also. Like, a lot of people don't actually work in the field they did a degree in. But anyway, I ended up doing fashion. And then it just went from there.
So when you were doing the fashion degree, you were kind of sure at that point you'd probably work in fashion?
Yeah, because I've always had a thing for clothes as well. So I kind of just mixed the two. Because fashion is quite design, especially because you can go into fashion buying, fashion business, fashion design. So design is quite arty still and creative.
And you were interested in kids' clothing back then, but you were told that you shouldn't be because there was no market for it?
Well, I wasn't interested in kids' clothing at the beginning. So I went in and I actually started with women's wear because you have to choose a route, like women's wear, men's, kids, whatever. And obviously I chose design and then I chose women's. I did that actually for the first 2 years. And then when you do a design course, you can have the opportunity to do a gap year to like work and build on your CV. So a lot of people took a year off to go into industry to work for free. So I went into London and I really wanted to work in high-end fashion, like luxury brands. So I did that for about half that year, 6 months. It was awful. Women's wear high-end brands in central London working for free.
I have never told about one of my businesses is e-com for luxury fashion. Mm. So we sell Balenciaga, YSL, McQueen, etc. And what looks, I mean, you know, it might be feel different for you, but to me, what looks like the coolest, most glamorous industry is fucking horrendous.
Oh.
And every one of those brands is the biggest set of CUNTs who just want to abuse the life out of everybody in the food chain below them.
Everybody. And that's what I realised. And that's when my rebellious side started to come out. I'm a bit of a serial quitter. That's not always a good thing, but actually,
We'll edit that bit out.
Yeah. When it comes to jobs and things, if I don't like something or I feel like it's not for me, you know, I stand my ground and I just, it started with the luxury world. I walked out at one point because they were having people sleep there and eat there and work all through the night, and it was all for free because you're an intern, and because you want it on your CV. When you're in the fashion world, it's very focused on building your CV, and it's the names that are on your CV. If you've got certain names, you're going to do well. And that was everybody's goal. And it was such a race to get to the best, you know, who's working for Chanel, who's working for Dior, who's got that on their CV. And it was not the best experience for me. And it works for some people, but for me, it just didn't. So after that, one of my friends at the time told me about Camp America.
Oh, yeah.
And I always wanted to travel. So then there wasn't much to do for Camp America in fashion. Then I found this fashion design thing to teach kids. So I thought, oh, lovely.
In America?
In America. And I loved kids. So I was like, how do I combine the two? Anyway, so I ended up going. I was about 22 at the time, by myself as well. My poor mum. All the way to America. I did that for like 2 months, teaching kids fashion design. And it was from then I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to do kids wear. And then I came back and then I told them, you know, I want to do kids wear. And they were like, they weren't on board with it at all. We don't have the resources. We don't have the tutors. It's going to be really hard for you.
Why is it wildly different from men's and ladies, you know, and why is it different tutors, different resources?
I just think it's not as popular.
No, but what I mean is why, like to me, you know, a 5-year-old boy's hoodie is just a shrunken down version of his dad's hoodie.
Oh, no.
Go on.
Kids wear is so technical and obviously it's more sensitive. So you've got children's safety. You can't have the draw cords too long. You can't have things, certain buttons because of it's kids. The quality of the fabric. Because of they're sensitive.
Okay.
The technical side of it, you know, it's a lot more, kids grow faster as well. So it's a lot more with measurements. It's a whole different world. And I didn't realise that either.
I've just been put in my place.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into kids where people don't know, more than men's and women's, I'd say, but you know. So yeah, they didn't have any of that. And I was like, I'm gonna do it anyway. So it just went from there and it was a success for me. It was a success for them as well. Because they'd never done it and I did so well from it.
Oh, what did they have to get some tutors in for you?
No, they didn't. I was kind of the person waiting in line to get help. So I did a lot of it on my own, a lot of self-taught stuff as well. It was tough for me.
And did you know at that point that you wanted to have a business, your own business in kids fashion, or you just wanted to work in it?
When people do fashion design courses, it is a thing to have your own business. And obviously that course you do, the final project is your collection, right? So I did my collection. I got into Graduate Fashion Week. I then got into the gala show, which is like the next show of like the people who are, you know, more, how do I say that? Not the best, but...
Up and coming.
It was, you know, it's been seen by a certain person. It's been finalized down to like a certain amount of people who's been chosen for it. And from that, I had opportunities from Ralph Lauren and Gap. Who were watching
to go work for them in design.
To go work for them in design in New York. So before H&M came, I was in America for a little bit because from that show in London, I got quite a lot of recognition. So I got a lot of interviews lined up. So then I went to New York, I had an interview with Ralph Lauren and Gap. But it kind of fell through because of the visa. America's quite difficult as a entry, you know, person to do it, but yeah, it was successful. And then I won the award, and then I got my H&M job about 6 months after I graduated. And it was weird because in my gap year I wanted to work for H&M so bad, and they turned me down about 3 times, and I was like, because that was like the cool internship to do at the time, and I got turned down by them. And then once I'd kind of grown, it was funny that I then ended up, they contacted me and I ended up working for them.
What was the attraction to H&M over a Ralph Lauren or, you know, a luxury brand?
I think it was a big company. It's international. It's a big company. It was high street as well. And I was told that high street's good because you learn a lot. When you're in luxury, they don't have time to teach you. They don't have time to train you. They don't have, because it's so fast paced and it's so, you know, it's small teams, luxury.
Is it, I mean, I don't know how much you've worked on the luxury side of your internship, but is it less arrogant? I mean, I would imagine that the luxury side of things is just full of absolute fucking tosses.
Go get me a coffee. Right. Like, you know what I mean? You're literally like running around. Some people like that. You know?
But in terms of the style and the designers and stuff, I mean, I imagine that they're all very, like in on the movies, you know, all very stuffy, pandering to some main designer who's a total bell end.
Whereas in
H&M or Primark or something like that, you've just got to get shit done. You know, get it out. And
yeah, and there's a lot more time to learn because it's bigger teams. It's totally different world. Totally, totally different. But that was my dream. I really wanted to work for a luxury brand. That's all I ever wanted. But it was, H&M was such an amazing experience for me, especially as a fresh graduate.
How long were you there for?
2.5 years. I was in Sweden, yeah.
And did you kind of work up the ranks, or were there different roles you did?
See, that's the thing about high street. It's slow to work your way up. So I started as a junior and I stayed as a junior, and that was part of the reason why I left, because, you know, I felt myself, I wanted more. I was like, oh, it's too stagnant for me now. So the job I got offered in Dubai was senior role. So I thought, well, maybe Dubai moves a little bit quicker. Same in London, though. It takes years to get to senior. And I got it very, very quickly. So I was very fortunate. So that was it, really. It was a big jump.
So you moved to Dubai. You're still working. At what point did Kid come along?
Kid came along 2022, the beginning of 2022. I was, you know, in that kind of 9-to-5 job. I loved it because it's what I studied. I don't really see it as a job, but I wasn't fulfilled at all. And I didn't know much about business, which is why I was quite hesitant, you know, because you need that. You can't just do design stuff. So it came about and I just started, you know, started with the branding, and it was quite a slow process. And I just fell into it, and it did take me a long time because, again, I was doing it on my own. But it just came about from not wanting to just have that normal life. I wanted more.
And what was the plan? What was the vision back then? I mean, was it that I'm going to set up my own business so that I can break away and, you know, build this big business? Or was it just, you know, I want to go and do some of my own designs that they might not let me do at H&M or whatever, and, you know, this is a bit of fun?
I think it's to kind of break away from that. And I think I've got a lot to give. And especially with kids, where I want to kind of make a bit of a statement with it, you know, because I don't personally feel it's been done yet at this point. I think with kids wear fashion, I think it's got so much potential.
And what's the brand ethos? What was your logic when you were starting?
I come from a big family, so.
Oh yeah, one of nine. What's the age difference?
Youngest is 18. Oh God, I might get this wrong. Oh no, they're going to come for me now. Youngest is 18, maybe 19. And oldest is 37.
Wow.
Yeah. But we're quite close in age as well, which is nice.
Well, you will be with nine of you.
Yeah. So it's like one, there's like 1 year, like 27, 28, 29, 30. Like it's, it's nice though. I love it.
Are your parents part of big families as well?
No.
Okay.
Not really. Quite normal sized. I've always been into mindfulness. I've always been into kind of, you know, the law of attraction stuff. I know it's like becoming a bit of a trend, but I was into this years ago.
let's talk about exactly what it is, because I mean, you know, I know of the law of attraction. Yeah. I always hear the word mindfulness.
Yeah.
But to me, it's, you know, it's birds who take gear on a Saturday night who want to try and repent on Instagram on a Monday morning. So,
oh, no. I think it's all about the mind, isn't it? And I think with me, it's always worked for me. I think I've always put myself in that box, and because I've always put myself in a box of like the impossible, and I've always known I could do it, I've always not. It's been very hard for me to then get out of that. So it's putting yourself in the mindset that, you know, you can do anything and nothing's impossible. And I think that's what took me out of like the normal life and staying in a 9-to-5. So,
and how do you make a physical representation of that in kids' clothing?
Well, this was the thing, because this is what was difficult. I thought, how am I gonna incorporate this into clothes? And for me, it was kind of, you know, I could have gone crazy because I'm a bit quirky when it comes to design. But, you know, you have to think about the business side of it. You have to think about what kids are wearing. They are wearing tracksuits. They are wearing T-shirts. It's comfort, you know. So it's just combining everything with what's in trend at the moment, what kids like, what parents like to put their kids in. And it's comfy stuff. And it's things that look nice and go with everything. So for me, it was about, you know, putting the statement on the clothes, which is why I've got the graphics on the back, the affirmations and the make-a-wish. And yeah, it's just keeping it trendy, but also making sure that I have a concept, because I didn't just want to do like a high street kids brand. I wanted to represent something, wanted to mean something, you know.
Let's talk about the business side. I mean, obviously you said you didn't really know anything about business before you started. I mean, do you have a business partner? Do you have investors? Have you got mentors? You know, how do you deal with the non-design stuff?
No, so this is what I mean. I was really thrown into the deep end, and this was my biggest struggle with it. I'd never done business. I didn't know, you know, what it was, how to do it. I didn't have any investors. I did it all myself. I had a
business. Still the case now.
Still the case now, yeah. I had help. I was lucky enough that I was already in that industry of fashion, and I had friends that were buyers. I had friends that were in business and could do numbers. So I actually just used what was around me. You know, if my friend was a buyer, or can you work out, you know, my markup, or can you teach me? I was just absorbing all that information, what was around me. And I was lucky that I had friends in the industry to teach me that, because otherwise I don't know what I would have done, to be honest. So for me, it was about using my resources to the absolute maximum. Like, I'd ring my friend at like 2 a.m., bless him, in the morning, like, how much should I, like, I didn't even know what to price it at. I had no idea. I was clueless. You know, and when it's your own money, oh, it's just a whole different risk. It's just a whole different situation.
And presumably, so you sell this online, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've had to do, and you do everything. You've gone from forming the company to creating the designs to sourcing them, to selling them, to marketing, to web building.
Everything. So you're literally doing 10 jobs at your you know. You're doing your branding, you're doing your socials, you're doing your business, you're doing your design, your what, like, it was chaos.
Do you like all the other jobs?
Do you know what? I like chaos and risk, and I think I love to learn all the time, but I think I'm at a point now where I'm ready to kind of get a team, and, you know, so I can focus on the things that I'm good at, because I've also learned you're not good at everything and you can't do everything, and I've always been that person that thinks I can do absolutely everything on my own, because I've always done it on my own. So I enjoyed it, but I think you've got to accept when someone can do something better than you.
Well, I think, you know, one of the biggest mistakes so many business owners make is kind of not having the humility or having the arrogance to think that because they're the business owner, that they're the best person for everything.
100%.
And you're using, I obviously have no idea about your skill sets. So you're using it as an example.
Yeah.
You know, for me, if a fashion designer goes to create a fashion brand because they're an excellent fashion designer and all that side of things, that doesn't necessarily mean you're the right person to run the business.
No, definitely not.
And you know, and the big mistakes happen, or, you know, best case, you know, the businesses don't grow as much as it should do.
Exactly.
When that person says, "Well, no, I own this business, therefore I'm the managing director, I'm the CEO, I'm going to do all this stuff."
Yeah.
When the reality is, you know, you still got all the shares, you still make all the money, so you can still have have the big ego about it. But if your skill is design, then do the design.
Do the design.
Let the purchaser do the purchasing. Exactly. The business, you know, the business manager run the business, and I think that's something you see as a stifling block in so many businesses.
100%. And I'm so excited for that as well, to, you know, work with people. And because, like you say, you've got to remember that you can't do everything. It's not your, you know, so I've studied design for 4 years, but I haven't studied business for 4 years, and someone else is going to do the job 10 times better than me. And it doesn't mean that that's being taken away. It just means it's going to be better. And I also want to learn from that. I want to learn from other people and learn how I can do them things. So I'm excited for that, to build a team and to, you know, grow and learn and, yeah.
What are some of the biggest challenges you've faced, I guess, both as a solo business owner and also with the industry in general? I mean, I would imagine it's a very competitive industry, very changing industry, and probably nowadays driven a lot by price as well.
Yeah, it's competitive, I think, and it's hard to keep up because it's fast fashion also. And when, like you say, when you're on your own and you don't have other people like knowing what to do, it can become quite overwhelming. But I think it's competitive, you know, it's fast paced. You've got to make sure you've got things lined up, especially if it's seasonal. You've got to make sure you drop your first collection, you should be designing it the next one straight away.
Yeah.
You've got to keep up with those trends that are coming next year, that are coming next season. So I think that's quite a big challenge, and everything that comes in between, you know, you're keeping up with all the jobs that you've got to do.
No. Oh, yeah. You had many dark nights where, you know, I've made a big mistake here. I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah. Especially, like I say, I've not had investors or anything. So I thought, what have I done? I've just spent all my savings on my own brand. Like, what, do you know what I mean? It's scary. And especially when you're abroad and you're doing something like that, because you've not got no one to fall back on, really. Do you know what I mean? You've not got your mum or dad or, you know, your closest friends or your brothers and sisters. So there's been times I thought, oh God, what have I done? And it's quite lonely, actually, you know, when you start a business. I think that's one of the things I faced. It's a very lonely place. People don't get it.
How many hours realistically do you, because I mean, obviously you work in a 9-to-5
anyway.
So how many hours do you get to commit to the business?
So when I was launching, I was getting up, you know, early in the morning, doing my hours on kid, then going to work. I'm even sometimes, you know, doing things on my lunch break, coming back from work, doing it again. And then all my weekends, any free time I had really was going on it. And then I'd take, you know, because you get vacation, don't you, when you work a job. So I was taking my vacation days and doing that. So, yeah, it was...
What's your website?
Kidd.ae.
KIDD.ae.
Yeah.
I want to see some of these designs so I can put it in context. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how much you can say or want to say, but I mean, in terms of what growth's been like, you know, how many items you have, what you know, where your turnover's gone from and to.
I started off probably bigger than I should have in terms of quantity. But when you do it locally, you have, you know, you can't really do small quantities. And I really wanted to make it here. It was quite a big thing for me to have it made in the UAE.
I was going to ask, what is the UAE thing? Because obviously, you know, the website's at .ae as well. I mean, is it a Dubai-focused
plan? I'll say for now, yes. Of course, I'm going to grow. And that is the aim, to make it, you know, more international. We ship international. But for now, it's based here. It
looks very comfy.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of like the choosing of fashion, I mean, are you, even though you're designing kids' clothing, presumably you're trying to appeal to the parents because it's the parents that buy it for the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, at what age do kids actually like it?
Yeah. Does that make sense? Like choose their clothes.
Yeah, or at least say, Mommy, I don't want to wear that horrible sweater today.
I don't know, because I didn't have kids. I'd say probably around 5 now they start kind of choosing, picking and choosing. But I've had such good feedback, to be honest, you know, a moment last night that I loved so much, and it was quite a really nice moment for me. I was at that concert.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking, God, there's so many people here. And I was looking around. There was a lot of kids there. And I was thinking, I can't wait for the day that I see my brand like around me when I'm walking around. I kid you not, someone messaged me a picture of their kid at that concert with my tracksuit on, and it was just like such a nice moment. You know, because it does start out slow. You don't get hundreds and hundreds of sales, but I think when you get one and when you see that, it just gives you that confidence of, you know, even if two people are buying it, even if two kids are wearing it, it's something, it means I'm doing something right. So that was a really nice moment for me yesterday.
How do you market?
I've got a team at the moment. I'm still learning about that world because, again, for me, that's such a new world, and I never worked in marketing. I've never had to. So, you know, social media is such a big thing, which I struggle with, not gonna lie. But yeah, social media, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to have a PR team who helped me and have kind of given me a bit of a kickstart into the marketing world.
Do you have, I mean, obviously I know your things with the brands, mindfulness, etc., but I mean, sustainability is very big in fashion as well now. Yeah. I mean, are these things that you really need to take account of? I mean, I forget all the different, let's say, avenues you could go down, but one of my criticisms of fashion from the fashion businesses I've got or had was that I think so many of these initiatives are just absolute fucking bollocks to try and look good. I mean, it's like you say,
sustainable.
Yeah, we're sustainable. We're ethical. We're this and the other. But like you say, we're taking interns on who makes sleep in the office.
Yeah, working free.
It's all also. Yeah. So disingenuous. Uh-huh. I always used to have arguments with my marketing team when they'd want to post something on social media, you know, whether it was, let's say, a Black Lives Matter type things, yeah, or a somebody's just died. Mm. And I'm like, why are we, let's say, I'm very sad they died, but we don't fucking know them.
We don't
even sell their gear, yeah, right? what are we posting them for? Yeah. I can't be doing with anything that's like this disingenuous.
Yeah,
like, you know,
it's
if
not
you
genuine.
If you love sustainability, then why don't you go build a brand over it, but you know, I mean, how beneficial are these things, you know, to growth in the fashion industry or to growth in someone's individual brand?
I think it's about your personal values. I think it's about the founder's personal values, you know. And I work in that industry, so I see a lot behind the scenes, you know, that people don't see, especially when it comes to high street, you know. And you have to be very, very careful when you use words like sustainable, because, you know, this is why I don't promote things that I'm not 100% sure on, because again, I'm new, I can happily admit I don't know massive amounts about sustainability. I'm learning, but I think you've got to be very cautious of what your, you know, your brand values and what you are kind of pushing. You know, you can be sustainable in the sense of you're getting it made locally because it's not being shipped or flown or whatever else. But I wouldn't necessarily promote, you know, we are sustainable in some ways, but there's so many things that you can't be sustainable in.
You want to say we're a business. The more you pay us, the more sustainable we can be.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you've got to be careful, because someone can say, well, you know, your packaging isn't sustainable, but even if it's been made in the UAE, or there's so many aspects, it's such a huge world, there's so many things. But I just think sticking to your values and just being honest with what you're doing, and, you know, being able to admit that you don't know everything and it's not perfect, and we still are growing as a company, and, you know, we're sustainable in some things, but some things maybe not. And in some areas we can be more sustainable and we'll get there. But for now, no, you know, and that's fine. But yeah.
And I think for me, one of the biggest takeaways from what you're saying then, which is applicable to every business, is A, authenticity.
Yeah,
and
100%.
B, having the humility or the lack of ego, whatever it is, to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how many situations do people pretend to know?
Exactly.
And just make a total tit of themselves. Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, there's this incorrectly perceived weakness in saying I don't know, when really ultimately, you know, how can we know everything?
Exactly.
You know, whether it's, you know, yes, you've been to uni to study fashion, yes, you've worked in it for many years, but you can't know everything about fashion.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know anything about business, and you know, it's not until we put our hands up and, you know, say I don't know and go and ask a question of somebody you know more knowledgeable than us, that we can ever move forward.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, that the one of the things that holds people back the most in any particular field.
And that topic, that one thing for me, has what's been part of my success is admitting that I don't know and asking, and you know, using people around you that do know and not being afraid to say, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. There's been so many times at work or in meetings where I'm like, oh, I don't know what you're, I don't understand, like, can you explain that? And it's always worked in my favor, and that's why I've been able to you know, so far do it by myself, because I have asked for help, you know, and I think it's a big, big thing, and it's important to do that.
And as someone who's obviously, you know, started a business, not coming from a business background, I mean, what would your top two or three tips be to aspiring entrepreneurs or people who don't even know they're entrepreneurs, people who've got a passion that they want to maybe commercialize?
Organization, definitely. Time management, definitely. You know, you can sit, you know, at home for 5 hours and not get hardly any work done, but you could get up at 5 and get so much done from 5 to 6. And I think it's not putting pressure on yourself, you know, that you've got to sit in every single weekend and work, like, it's like that hustle culture. So I think prioritizing things, making the most out of time, being organized and asking for help, and not, you know, not having that kind of ego of, oh, I can do it by myself. You can't. You actually can't.
Have you got any kind of, you know, like specific ongoing mentors that you work with or that help you, or have you got lots of great contacts that you call whenever you need a bit of advice?
Again, I think it's being lucky to have people around me, you know, people at work, my friends that maybe have worked in fashion buying from before, or business, or I think being surrounded by such, you know, great and helpful people, it's saved me in times. You know, there's been times where, you know, maybe my suppliers changed the price or like last minute and I'm panicking, and I'm lucky enough to be able to call someone and say, is that right? Because I don't know. And to get that answer. So there was a lot of times where I had to figure things out by myself, but then there was times where I really needed to reach out and ask people when I didn't have a clue. So, yeah, there's been a lot of moments where I could have really messed up, I think, stuff by not knowing.
So what does the future hold for Kid? When do you think you'll be in a position to quit your 9-to-5 and to go full-time at this?
Oh, hopefully soon. Hopefully, sooner than I want.
Hopefully your existing boss isn't listening.
No. Yeah, God, I can't imagine. Yeah, hopefully soon.
It's a 2024 plan.
Yeah, it is.
And you can do it yourself, or you think you need to raise investment for this?
I think I need to, you know, maybe, yeah, a little bit of investment, and maybe a team, you know, or just a partner, or start to get different people coming in, even if it's freelance, even if it's full time, just whatever. I think I need to start, you know, looking for people to come on board, because there's so much opportunity, and there's, you know, I've started to look into going into schools and hospitals even to do workshops and stuff like that. And it's got so much potential, and it just...
Workshops to teach the kids.
Yeah, you know, anything to take the clothes, to do mindfulness workshops, even if it's, you know, painting on a T-shirt, creativity, expressing themselves, whatever it may be, to just get that, you know, message out there a little bit more of it's important for kids to... you know, have those affirmations, even if it is just in daily life, putting a T-shirt on and being like, oh, like, what does that say, you know? So, yeah.
So you'd like to see Kid contribute to the, I guess, to the broader conversation of mindfulness.
Yeah, definitely, 100%, 100%. Yeah, for sure.
Well, look, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks so much.
Love hearing the journey, and always like to talk to another UK to Dubai yeah. transplant. Just before you go, I mean, obviously I know you mentioned the website when I was just having a quick look, but just give yourself a shout out for web addresses, social media addresses, and let everyone know where they can find you if they've got 3 to 12-year-old kids.
Yeah, we're on Instagram at kid.ae, and we also have a website which is www.kid.ae as well.
And that's kid with 2 D's.
Yes, K-I-D-D, yeah. That's a whole nother story. But yeah.
Well, listen, I will hopefully look forward to doing a round two with you at some point in the future when you can tell me that you've left your job, that kids taken over the world.
Yeah.
And by that time, little Nelly will be big enough for a pink tracksuit from you as well. So
thank you.
Hannah, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.